It began as a tropical wave in the Atlantic, but soon grew into one of the most intense hurricanes in years, just as it slammed into Florida. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at BayCareEvents.org.
From the Donna Studio at WUSF Public Media, I'm Carson Cooper. Used to be that whenever the subject of bad hurricanes came up, Andrew was the storm everyone talked about. That changed, though, on August 13, 2004. On that Friday the 13th, a storm named Charley made landfall in southwest Florida as a strong Category 4 hurricane. That was the strongest to hit that part of the state since Donna back in 1960 and the strongest to hit the U.S. since Andrew in 1992. Valerie Alker was a reporter with NPR member station WGCU in Fort Myers at the time. Welcome to Florida Matters.
It is my pleasure to join Florida Matters.
I remember that morning so well. I'm sure you do, too. The National Hurricane Center, the forecast track at 8 that Friday morning had the storm missing you and slamming right into the Bay Area. Even as late as 11 o'clock that morning, the official forecast track had the storm passing farther to the north of you. But Charley made landfall at Charlotte Harbor right around, what was it, 5 o'clock that afternoon?
Yeah, I think there's a clock in downtown Punta Gorda that was silenced by the storm. I think it was about 4:20. I was hosting Morning Edition that day on WGCU down in Fort Myers. I live up in Punta Gorda. And it was one heck of a morning because the forecast just kept going from bad to worse. And I wasn't, you know, I was there by myself. I had no producer. And I wasn't really watching television. I was just checking the National Hurricane Center website for updates and the watches and the warnings and, you know, where they're being extended to and so on and so forth. And things just kept deteriorating as the morning went on. And so, I kept getting more and more nervous because I live in a house that was built in 1968 on a saltwater canal.
So you were home at the time Charley made landfall at 4 o'clock hour that afternoon. Did you consider evacuating?
We did consider evacuating, although, as you said, the initial forecast had it pointed a bit further north. However, we knew that if it did hit further north, there was a good chance that the tidal surge would flood our house.
Do you think residents were caught off guard, totally off guard by Charley because of this late in the game forecast change?
We knew we were in for something, and our neighborhood was pretty much evacuated. The police had gone through, I don't know how much you know about Punta Gorda, but it's there are a large number of mobile home communities in Punta Gorda with, you know, retired seniors living in them. And those are pretty much, they had been evacuated pretty much entirely. So I wouldn't say we were completely caught off guard, but I think it was a lot worse than anyone thought it would be.
How long after Charley did it take for your neighborhood to start resembling your normal neighborhood once again?
Oh, at least a year. And maybe it was strange because every house in Pirate Harbor has a roof that's about 10 years old. So if you were an archaeologist, you'd go, an event must have occurred at some time because every roof is from the same era, even though the houses aren't. But, you know, we had more trees before Charley, and we had blue jays. And I have not seen a blue jay in Pirate Harbor since Hurricane Charley. The trees that supported blue jays are not here anymore. We lost a key lime tree that disappeared without a trace.
One dilemma faced by many reporters is walking that fine line between covering the news and becoming part of it. You experienced the personal impact of Charley back then.
Yeah, it was always a very, very, very difficult living as we do, so close to Charlotte Harbor, on the water, in a low-lying house that was built, you know, is grandfathered in. You could never build it today because of code. Worrying about, you know, losing your home, and at the same time, you know, you have a responsibility to your job to be there to do what you know to be what you're to do what you're paid to do, and hard to do and expected to do. So it's always a very stressful time.
Valerie Alker, who reported on Hurricane Charley for NPR member station WGCU in Fort Myers, great work back in August 2004. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Carson. It was a pleasure.
Hurricane experts watched as that season's third named storm, Charley, began to grow and become more threatening. A tropical storm watch went up for Jamaica on Tuesday, August 10th. A hurricane warning was issued for parts of Florida by Wednesday, and on Friday the 13th, while many in the Tampa Bay area braced for what they thought may be a direct hit, the Category 4 Hurricane Charley took a sudden right turn into Punta Gorda and Charlotte County. Florida Matters' Bobby O'Brien takes us back to just hours after that devastating blow, when it was a tense time in that small community of mostly senior citizens nestled between Sarasota and Fort Myers.
Let me take you back in time to Sunday, August 15th, 2004. It is 2 days after Hurricane Charley blew through Punta Gorda. Charlotte County Director of Emergency Management, Wayne Saliday, stands outside his partially destroyed operations center at the airport. The intensity of his press briefing is palpable.
Yes, there are fatalities. Yes, there are people in those refrigerated trucks at the temporary morgue. But we're not prepared to say how many. And you're not going to couch me into saying it, goad me into saying it, because frankly, I at this point am not sure that I know the accurate number. We've seen 11 different numbers.
Saliday had been quoted in a newspaper that he feared once the cadaver dogs went through the debris, they'd find scores dead. Ten years later, Saliday still heads up Charlotte County Emergency Operations.
I vividly remember the press hammering me about the death count.
It's August 2014, and Saliday stands below Punta Gorda's town clock on Marion Avenue. It was ground zero for Charley in 2004.
The commercial media needs the sensationalism. They need numbers. I'm telling you, from the initial press conference I did very, very early Saturday, nothing was asked more commonly than death count, body count, body count. We're hearing bodies are stacked like cordwood.
The misunderstanding, he says, arose when state emergency officials called about fatalities. Saliday was being cautious and ordered two portable mortuaries, 18-wheel refrigerated semi-trucks. It ended up they weren't needed. But that Sunday, teams were still going door to door searching for survivors and fatalities among the 11,000 damaged or destroyed homes.
And as of that point, I had three that I knew of. An elderly couple blown out of a mobile home east of Punta Gorda. A gentleman up in Port Charlotte who had left the bosom of his family to run out to get something off his boat. Was mortally wounded by flying debris. And the next morning, we found victim number four. His nephew found him bled out on his bed from a piece of glass that got him in the femoral artery.
Just 2 hours before Charley hit, Saliday was operating out of their headquarters, a steel building across from the airport. Then he got a phone call from Max Mayfield, the former director of the Hurricane Center.
I wasn't real happy with the Hurricane Center at that point anyway. The track had changed. The intensity had really changed. I'll admit, I was a bit put off. And I said, what do you want? He goes, well, you've answered my question because you're still in that giant TED shed of yours. And he said, I guess this will be the last time we talk. And I'm thinking, gee, where's Max going? And then it dawned on me, he meant that I wasn't going to be here if I stayed there much longer.
Saliday and the rest of his team moved to a secondary location, the nearby jail that was reinforced.
I finally left the building there at Max's behest, and I'm glad I did, because about an hour later, 20,000 square feet of the roof was peeled off. The air conditioners were ripped off and thrown like tumbleweeds across the field. 22 miles an hour. The most significant impacts of the storm were caused in about a 15 to 20 minute period. Charley was moving three times faster than a typical hurricane at 22 degrees north. That's based on climatology. I mean, normally you're talking 5 to 7. He was moving 22. So he was small, he was fast, he was here, he was gone.
It was still daylight when Saladay emerged Friday evening.
I stepped outside, and the building we were in was the only one of 10 at the airport that survived. Every other building was severely compromised or flattened. It dawned on me that after 17 years in the position, this was it.
His first move, even before the tropical winds subsided, Saladay called his mentor, the director of Sarasota Emergency Operations.
I called Greg Fagans, who I, over the years, had come to call Dad. We had a very close relationship. When I pushed the talk button, I said to him, Dad, we were ground zero on this one, and we're hurt bad. I kid you not, it wasn't 5 seconds before it kicked back, and he said, son, we're on our way. And to this day, I get terribly emotional thinking about the response from my partners in Sarasota and Manatee County.
The downtown core of Punta Gorda was demolished. Glass office buildings blown out, totaled. Historic brick buildings collapsed.
Wind engineers from Clemson and Texas A&M, who essentially turned this city into a petri dish, said that the winds to do that took wind gusts to 190 miles an hour.
Saladay still thinks Charlie should be upgraded to a Category 5 hurricane. He was asked to write a blog for FEMA on the 10th anniversary of Charlie. He wrote about the city's inhabitants and their resiliency.
We have people, retirees here, who were pretty much products of the Depression. They were tail end of World War II, the Korean War. And basically, as I looked around in the days immediately after, I didn't see anybody sitting around whining, waiting for FEMA to come in on a big white horse and give them free stuff. I saw people pulling up their britches and getting busy. I saw the city of Punta Gorda form what ultimately became Team Punta Gorda. They hired an urban planner out of Miami, and that team got together with the urban planner, and they redesigned the city.
Where Saladay stands, the town clock has been restored. On the south side of Marion Avenue, a block of historic buildings were saved. There are several new buildings, a new hotel, a convention and event center, and a city parking garage. But at the very center of Punta Gorda is a full city block that remains vacant. Charlie destroyed the shopping mall that stood there, and the recession has stymied any new growth. For Florida Matters, I'm Bobby O'Brien.
Charlie was just one in a series of bad storms. In fact, 6 of the 10 most expensive storms ever to hit Florida arrived during the 2004 and 2005 seasons. They were costly and deadly for residents. Insurance companies took a huge hit, and no surprise, property insurance rates went way up. But while it's been years since Florida took a direct hit by a major hurricane, rates are still high. Florida Matters' Robin Sussingham takes a look at why.
In the two-year period of 2004-2005, it was just one devastating storm after another, says Florida's insurance consumer advocate Steve Burgess.
Of course, Charlie was one of the major ones. I believe it was listed at a shade over $15 billion worth of damage. But also that year we had, you know, Ivan and Rita and Francis and Wilma, I think, came in through. And
Gene. Didn't we have Jean?
Jean, yes, mm-hmm. yes, Jean, yes. So it was quite a season. Dennis is another one.
We left out Katrina. During those 2 years, Burgess says hurricane damage claims were filed in all of Florida's 67 counties. But now it's been 9 years since the unprecedented storm season of 2004-2005, and insurance premiums, already the most expensive in the country, have gone up about 50% statewide. 9 years without a hurricane and continuing high insurance premiums. Steve Burgess says 9 years is not a long time to insurance analysts who are calculating the risk of hurricane losses over a 100-year period and then normalizing that over time.
9 years is not going to have as major of an impact as intuitively it seems like it ought to.
Well, you're getting to the nub of the question, because 9 years to a human being it seems like a while, and
yes.
you feel like...
Why aren't my rates coming down? Yes.
Exactly. Yeah.
And the only answer is that the way that the rates are calculated to begin with are that, you know, if we say the amount of losses aggregately for the 2004-2005, you wouldn't take those 2 years and say, okay, this is the amount we're going to collect next year for rates. You'd say, no, you know, the insurers, you just have to eat that and spread that over time. But when they do spread that over time, of course, that means there'll be periods of time for which there won't be any significant losses, and we hope that they're just building up reserves at the time or building up surplus for the next big storm.
So the insurance company's losses from the 2004-2005 hurricane season had to be made up over time, and that's what's still happening. State-owned Citizens Property Insurance Corporation, the state's largest insurer, has built up those reserves, Burgess says, and in fact, it's going to decrease its rates for next year. Most insurance companies, however, are not decreasing their rates. And a big reason for that is a lack of competition, according to Michael Letcher. Letcher created the website homeinsurancebuyers.org. He says 119 businesses have active policies in Florida, but only 39 are actually writing new business. And most Floridians have only 3 to 5 companies to choose from in reality. Letcher also says more companies in Florida need to have at least $100 million in surplus, and the companies in Florida carry a lot less than that. Insurance companies will buy their own insurance, called reinsurance, but Letcher says that won't be enough.
I don't care how much reinsurance they have. These companies need to be bigger. We have to get back to the days of where Florida has at least 100 companies writing new business, with many of them having over $100 million in surplus. It's the only way our market's ultimately going to recover.
Letcher lists some other reasons why our rates have stayed high. Non-hurricane claims like fire and theft have been increasing, and Letcher says that fraudulent claims have been on the rise as well. One bright spot is reinsurance costs. Those have been declining, and Burgess says those cost savings should be passed on to consumers soon. Robin Sussingham, WUSF 89.7 News.
We're taking a look back at Hurricane Charley, which killed 8 people in Florida and caused more than $15 billion in damage 10 years ago. Coming up, we'll revisit Punta Gorda and Arcadia to see how these towns have recovered since the storm. What do you remember about those bad hurricane seasons? Join the conversation on our Facebook page or send an email to floridamatters@wusf.org. I'm Kirsten Cooper. This is Florida Matters. This is Florida Matters. I'm Kirsten Cooper. 10 years ago this month, Hurricane Charley swirled its way inland through the quaint DeSoto County town of Arcadia. Sustained winds of 100 miles an hour ripped down walls and roofs from its historic Main Street, dealing a major blow to its antiques district. Florida Matters' Steve Newborn was there in the aftermath and returned a decade later to see how the town of Arcadia has changed.
10 years ago, this was the sound heard most often in Arcadia. Shop owners, homeowners, and just about everyone else cleaned up the mess from Hurricane Charley for months. About 3,600 homes were destroyed or significantly damaged, displacing 16,000 people. The National Guard patrolled the wrecked streets, enforcing a curfew that lasted for weeks.
Adhere to their dawn to dusk curfew. You can be arrested if you do not comply.
The storm was a huge blow for a town known for its annual Florida Championship Rodeo and antique shops. Hardest hit was the central street, Oak Avenue, which today looks like it hasn't changed a bit since the 1920s. In the center of town is the old Opera House, an ornate two-story building that's been around since 1906. Charley tore off parts of the roof, pouring 3 feet of water into what had been converted into an antique mall. I talked to the owner at the time, Daryl McNeil, 1 month after Charley struck. Over the whirring of drying fans, she was afraid her business wouldn't survive.
Yeah, it was horrible. When I first saw it, I was in tears. I cried for probably a week.
Pools of water collected on the old wood floors.
McNeil had to throw tarps over her antique furniture to keep them from ruin. The blue tarps are still visible through holes in the ceiling.
It's been quite a month. We've had a lot of obstacles in town, and not just by getting hit by Charlie and losing my roof, the original roof, but also with Francis coming through and taking off my temporary roof, plus the remains of my original roof. So now I'm kind of dealing with the mold. And I should have brought in my lawnmower because it's getting kind of thick on the ceiling.
It took 4 months for McNeil's business to reopen. She ended up selling the old opera house, and all 14 rooms in the main theater got sold again to James Crosby, a native of Maine.
And your receipts.
Okay.
Thank you
so
much. Enjoy the day now. So, yeah, it's hasn't been changed, though. That's the nice thing about it. It's the last, well, one of the last unrestored theaters of its era.
Crosby wishes he kept old squares of tin ceiling that was laying around that he later found out were part of his original ceiling.
Actually, the place, other than the roof and the damage from the rain, I'm surprised the place held together as well as it did, because a lot of these panes in these windows are, you know, no longer held in by any caulking. They just rattle around, and they're all from 1906. I mean, you can tell by the waviness of the lead glass that I'm just surprised as many panes as still remain as do. I would have figured those would have all just shattered by now in any amount of wind.
A block down Oak Avenue, Pam Ames and Linda Williams are spiffing up their new shop, the Peddler's Boutique. Ames recalled battling the storms in their old shop back in 2004.
I can remember that part of the building across the street went through our window and blew off our back door, and the roof came off, and we sat there with thousands of dollars worth of inventory wet and nothing to do with it.
She says it took a long 4 months to reopen.
You know, it really is devastating, and it makes you really appreciate what you do have and let you know that you're blessed. But you do pull up your bootstraps and keep on going. That's about all you can do.
No one really expected a storm this vicious to come this far inland. After all, Arcadia hadn't seen a direct hit since Hurricane Donna 4 decades earlier. A wall holding a Payne's Antiques collapsed just off Oak Avenue. The city's water tower lay crumpled along State Road 70. It never got rebuilt. Williams says it took a long time for the town to recover after that hurricane.
It probably took 2 years
at least. Because one of the buildings, the side of it completely collapsed. So they had to get the bricks and everything off the street. And then they had to search for an engineer that was willing to come, that was within their budget.
Mandy Hines is now the interim county administrator for DeSoto County. Back during Charlie, she was in a basement of the county courthouse handling emergency calls. What sticks in her mind is during the height of the storm, she couldn't do a thing to help anyone.
I think the hardest part during that time was manning the phones and hearing people calling and crying for help, that they were trapped in their homes, that the storm was coming, their house was coming apart on them, and there was nothing, you know, nothing we could do. Couldn't send emergency vehicles out because of the winds. Couldn't do anything but try to advise them to get in the safest place and just talk to them. But that was probably the hardest part, is hearing the panic in people's voices that chose to stay in their homes.
Then she heard a wall of the town's lone Red Cross shelter collapsed.
So when we hear that over the phone, of course we can't see it. We don't know how bad it is. They moved them during the storm over to the high school across the street. But that was scary. When you hear the building failed, you don't know what that means. The building collapsed, the building's gone. But thank God there were no casualties.
Hines' own home got destroyed too, so she ended up sleeping at work for months. The town has changed in some minor ways, she says. The 100-year-old oaks are all gone. New housing peppers the area since so many homes were damaged. But the storm did some good, she says. Strangers helping strangers, an outpouring of help from your neighbors.
It's a wake-up call for preparedness, and at the end of the day, if the people are safe and your family's safe, the rest is just stuff. It's just stuff.
It's that kind of stuff she hopes she'll never have to relive. For Florida Matters, I'm Steve Newborn.
As we heard earlier in the show, Florida Matters' Bobby O'Brien was in Punta Gorda after Hurricane Charlie. Ahead of the 10-year anniversary, she revisits Punta Gorda, where a citizens group has paved the way to revitalization after much of downtown was demolished by the hurricane.
That's the sound of growth in downtown Punta Gorda 10 years after Hurricane Charley. One of the few remaining historic buildings on Marion Avenue is being remodeled.
The business has been closed for about 6 years, so we're going to reopen it early to mid-October.
Chris Evans is rebuilding the Turtle Club.
American seafood, casual, elegantly casual restaurant. We're going to do outdoor dining. We also are building a claw bar.
His childhood friend, Mark Figueredo, says the restaurant is symbolic of the community spirit, just like the River City Grill next door.
It's not just this restaurant. It's part of like a second renaissance of downtown Punta Gorda.
The first renaissance arrived on the tail of Charley's 150-mile-an-hour winds that flattened much of the downtown in 2004.
You had Hurricane Charley, but then a few years after that, you know, lots of homes got rebuilt, the economy boomed, but then you had Hurricane Economy that came and we had a massive downfall. So that's why it's almost like, okay, we can do that again and things are starting to come back, and it's really exciting to see that.
Part of that excitement comes because of Team Punta Gorda, a nonprofit community group that formed after Charley. Figueredo and his friend Evans both got involved with the group.
It was the first time a community-led grassroots effort came together and said, look, this is who we are, this is what our vision is. And that was really the first emergence of having that community activism, if you will, that really drove a lot and gained a significant amount of political capital and power.
Just down the street, the former CEO of Team Punta Gorda, Nancy Prafke, dines on her favorite, blackened fish tacos at the Opus restaurant.
A lot of the people that got involved were people that had transplanted here, and some of the people that were many generations here were like, oh, what are these people going to do with our community? So there was some skepticism. They all came together anyway and said, we can make our community better. The government was so embroiled in just providing basic services and cleaning up.
So the community came together, formed the nonprofit organization, raised more than $250,000 in 8 weeks, and hired a city planner.
We hired a renowned urban planner from the University of Miami, Jaime Correa, who has done a lot of work in Florida and around the world. He himself at first didn't want to come, because he had gone through Hurricane Andrew, and it brought back memories. The residents here drove over and made a special appeal. So then he came, and when he saw the community, he says, I have to help. So he brought his whole team over, and they led a week-long of public meetings called charrettes.
Prafke says it took a couple of years to see visible signs of progress, but 5 years after Charley, there were no outward signs of the disaster.
The lesson that FEMA learned was getting the community involved will speed up the pace of recovery dramatically.
And Team Punta Gorda did not stop with the city master plan. It has helped with numerous projects, like the walkway along Charlotte Harbor and a free bicycle lending program. Prafke, who resigned her volunteer CEO position to run for city council, says Team Punta Gorda's mission is to make it a better place to live, work, and play. For Florida Matters, I'm Bobby O'Brien.
And that's it for today's show. You can join the conversation on our Facebook page or send an email to floridamatters@wusf.org. Florida Matters is produced by Lottie Watts and is a production of WUSF Public Media. Our engineer is Craig George. I'm Carson Cooper. Thanks for listening.